Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, August 17th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today, we're talking about sustainability for major retailers. My first guest on the show today is senior analyst Blake Droesch. Hey, Blake.
Hey, Sarah. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Also joining us today is senior analyst Sky Canaves. Hey, Sky.
Hi, Sarah. Great to be here, too.
All right, let's get started with our first segment, news and reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's headline is an August 10th story from TechCrunch titled, Amazon expands palm scanning payment tech to 65 more Whole Foods locations. So Amazon's bringing their biometric payment tech to a number of new stores in California. With this tech, customers are able to pay simply by holding their hand over a scanner, and their payment is attached to their palm. Blake, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is...
Yes, so this is obviously something that Amazon does a lot. They take the technology that they develop in their Amazon Go or Amazon Fresh stores, which are kind of just like the testing grounds for the new technology, and they eventually apply it to Whole Foods, which obviously has a much larger brick and mortar footprint. Their largest store presence by a lot. This is very similar to what they're doing with the smart shopping cart, started at Amazon Fresh, and they're now, you know, rolling it out this year into Whole Foods as well. As far as the technology goes, I will say I'm torn here as whether or not people are going to come around to this eventually or just be totally creeped out. On one hand, I think that Amazon has so much data on its customers already. So many people already use biometric data to, you know, unlock their Apple devices, etc., that this sort of seems like the logical next step that people sort of maybe semi-reluctantly but eventually just move into. Or this is just going to be sort of a step too far because the use case for it isn't all that different. I mean, you think about the amount of time that you save by, you know, pulling a card out of your wallet and tapping it against a machine versus putting your hand there. I mean, that's a, you know, couple of seconds that I think most people would be willing to take out of their day in order to not, give over something as intimate as a palm print to a company that doesn't necessarily have the best reputation for protecting privacy.
Okay, let the record reflect that Blake went way over time, so he doesn't just do that with Marcus. He does that.
I know.
With
who,
me as
who
well.
Told you to say that?
I listened.
Where's Marcus?
All right, Sky, your review of this headline of Amazon palm scanning technology moving into Whole Foods, more Whole Foods in 60 seconds is.
So I'm certainly on the more creeped out side of the consumer spectrum on this. And I say that as a pretty active Prime user and Whole Foods shopper. And I also don't know that this really makes shopping at Whole Foods more convenient because consumers would first have to enroll in Amazon One at the supermarket at a separate kiosk. And then if you want to enjoy those special Prime member discounts at Whole Foods, you would also have to opt in to link this palm scanning Amazon One technology to your Prime account. And that's something I'm really wary about, whether consumers want to link their biometrics to their entire Prime shopping history. Especially one key difference between this Amazon palm scanning and something like Apple's Face ID is that Amazon's going to store this data in the cloud, whereas Face ID is just on your device. So there's a little bit more consumer comfort around that. And I think Amazon also tried to introduce this palm scanning at a concert venue in Colorado earlier this year, and there was a big outcry over that, and eventually that plan was withdrawn. So I see them offering this as an option, but I don't see people really taking them up on it.
Okay, Sky went over time too, so Blake's not alone. It's my fault. I hate this. I don't want Amazon knowing how sweaty my hand is. That said, all my payment data currently lives in my phone, which is essentially attached to my hand. So, like, maybe I just hate this because I've seen one too many sci-fi movies. All right, we'll keep moving. It's time for our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is sustainability. So most consumers say they care about sustainability. Things like synthetic materials, excessive production, wasteful packaging, and carbon pollution are all important to customers. I'm wondering how much this value impacts actual customer decision making. Blake, you just wrote a report on this, so I'm going to go to you first.
Yeah, so I think the findings from this report were really interesting in the sense that an overwhelming majority of the consumers that we surveyed said that they do, you know, they are concerned about the environment and that it does impact their shopping behavior. And the majority of the people that we surveyed did report buying a product because it had some sort of sustainability feature within the last 6 months. But, and it's a pretty big but, is when you look at what are the priorities of shoppers when they're actually deciding what to buy and which stores to shop at, when they can only pick, you know, I think one of the questions was you have to pick your top three, things like value and convenience and, you know, findability were ranked way, way higher than sustainability. I think only 13% of the respondents said that a retailer's eco-friendly practices were a priority in-store, and then 14% online, compared to something like a product value, the quality for price. 46% said that it was a priority in-store and 48% online. So while it is important, it gets outranked pretty significantly by way more practical concerns.
Sure. I mean, yeah, especially right now, right? Inflation cooled some this month, but prices of household goods are still really high. Are consumers deprioritizing sustainability as a result?
Yeah, I think there have been some third-party surveys that I've looked at that have showed, well, the importance of sustainability sort of remains level. The importance of, you know, value has increased a lot. And I think that, you know, that naturally has to, you know, come into effect in terms of like how people are deciding, you know, what products to buy. And if they're trading down, you know, there is the likelihood that they're paying less of a premium on items that might not be at least marketed as eco-friendly. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there, you know, when you look at the categories where consumers do tend to buy more eco-friendly products, they are things like food and beverage and household items. And these are like essential goods that people need to keep purchasing despite inflation. So I think that's actually where buying sustainably is a larger concern, because the places where people in the past were more likely to buy eco-friendly products are the items that they're sort of getting squeezed for right now.
Skye, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it was interesting from the survey findings, or what I found really interesting from the survey findings was that consumers are tending to value most things that directly touch them, like the products they come into contact with, the packaging they see, and things like recycling and value around resale or refurbished items. But at the same time, there's definitely a lot of budget reallocation going on as consumers have been paying higher prices for gas and groceries, where I think something like organic produce is a category where they're cutting back on just because it's something where there's a very clear premium. And we see this even in non-inflationary times, kind of that split between who's willing to pay more for organic versus not willing to pay or not able to pay.
Sure. I think I tend to be a bit more cynical about this. I think that retailers are pretty successful in making sustainability feel like a consumer decision, where like you have two products next to each other and one's in eco-friendly packaging, supposedly. It feels a lot more like it's your decision to buy that packaging instead of the retailer's move to sort of change up their whole model. Going off of that question, we've touched on this some, but how has economic uncertainty changed sustainability messaging? Since people are associating sustainability, at least in marketing, with a premium, is economic uncertainty changing how retailers are marketing?
I don't think necessarily it has to be either or. And I would preface it by saying, you know, I haven't seen a noticeable difference in brands moving away from sustainability messaging, just because a lot of the brands that tend to really hammer it home are already, it's already such a big part of their brand identity that, you know, they're not going to switch up. But I do think that you have companies that do market themselves around sustainability also marketing themselves based on the longevity of their products. Mm. I think there's sort of the antithesis of fast fashion, especially are selling products that are going to be purchased at a premium, but are going to last a lot longer, not only because that's, you know, a practice that benefits, you know, sustainable shopping habits, but you also do get more bang for your buck in the long run. I do think that, you know, there certainly are priorities in terms of how marketing messaging works. So maybe brands and retailers who are not necessarily tied to sustainability as a core identity of their brand may opt to include messaging that's more value-based in the short term, and that I think would just inherently maybe mute or tone down the messaging that they're including on sustainability, at least in the short term. I don't know if, Sky, if you've seen anything like along those lines.
I agree that there might be some shift around focusing on the value associated with sustainable practices. I know Walmart has recently rolled out some new recycling initiatives, and they also announced a new program for refurbished goods that are offered to consumers at a discount. And this is something I think that ties into the whole resale trend, where more brands and retailers are getting into resale and refurbished goods. This also helps to deal with the huge issue of returns for online purchases, which has, you know, grown in tandem with the rise of e-commerce over the last couple of years. So that certainly puts a focus on the value as well as sustainability.
Sure. Blake, you mentioned fast fashion. This is something I found really interesting in your report, not fast fashion specifically, but the age groups that prioritize sustainability. I think of fast fashion as something that's really big with Gen Z, really big with younger consumers. But I also think of younger consumers as the more value-based consumers. Your report didn't necessarily find that in terms of sustainability, especially when it comes to avoiding synthetic materials. It's older consumers that tend to be avoiding those materials rather than younger.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And I think, you know, Sky brought up what is like one of the major themes of the report is that a lot of consumers are more likely to find these sustainability features or offerings important based on like the benefits to their own health and wellness. That is sort of generation agnostic, right? And I think even maybe older generations, you could make the argument, do have a higher degree of skepticism against how things like, you know, fast fashion and other types of, you know, food and beverage products that use artificial ingredients and things like that are produced. And they might be just less inclined because the older you get, the more health conscious you are. But I think you're exactly right, Sarah, in terms of like why Gen Z and millennials to a lesser extent didn't really over-index on a lot of these features being important, because you have the younger generations have, you know, the least spending power and concern for the environment. They might be more aware of the impact of climate change, but that awareness might lead them down the path of, it's not really up to me to be spending on things that are, you know, being sold to me as sustainable. It's the corporations that are, you know, selling these products that and really have these huge carbon footprints that need to be, you know, taking on the bulk of the responsibility here, because I can't afford to. And even when I do, it's not making as big of a difference.
That's such a good point, that older consumers might be more swayed by making their individual choices, where younger consumers might feel a little bit more like I do about that, where their decisions aren't really making the big impact there. That really leads me into the next thing I wanted to talk about before we go to break. Actual sustainability and perceived sustainability are two different things. People want eco-friendly products, but they don't want higher prices. And the result is often greenwashing, which is when companies tout environmental values as a marketing tool without taking discrete actions to make any changes. Is greenwashing always a given when it comes to sustainability? Is there any way to avoid it as a retailer or as a consumer?
I think it's really challenging because there are so many aspects to sustainability throughout the supply chain, and it's very hard to get the holistic story about a product. So one aspect might be sustainable and others might not. For example, in fashion, we hear a lot about recycled plastic being used to make garments, and that sounds more environmentally friendly. But in fact, when these products are washed, then some of harmful particles get leached out into the water supply. So that's an example where there might be a feel-good aspect, and it's better than new plastic, but it's still not better than not using that at all. And I think we're also starting to see a bit more of a backlash against brands like Shein, which is all about ultra cheap, ultra fast fashion. So they've kind of been forced to respond with some sustainability initiatives, but that might not significantly move the needle because its core consumers are already buying due to those very low prices, and maybe it's all that they can afford. But the ones who are opposed to Shein and their kind of business model, they're unlikely to change their minds. And in fact, when they hear about their sustainability initiatives, they charge them with greenwashing.
Cool. Okay. So we've talked through sustainability within retailers, economic uncertainty, and greenwashing. If you want to read more about this, subscribers can check out Blake's report. It's the U.S. Retail Sustainability Perceptions Benchmark Report on insiderintelligence.com. After the break, we're going to dive into what the big names are doing and how they can improve. But first, a short message. If you enjoy this show and you're looking for more great content, subscribe to Behind the Numbers, the weekly listen from eMarketer. Whether you're looking to accelerate your career or inform business decisions, this podcast will help you make sense of the rapidly changing worlds of digital marketing, media, and commerce every Friday. Our host, Marcus Johnson, and eMarketer Insider Intelligence analysts will keep you up to date, try to win the week's championship belt with thought-provoking analysis, talk about unpopular opinions, give you enough dinner party data to last the weekend, and have lots of laughs along the way. Listen and subscribe to Behind the Numbers today. Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. This week, we're ranking the biggest opportunities for retailers surrounding sustainability. Blake, can you give me the first retailer with a major sustainability opportunity?
Yeah, so in our benchmark, Costco is kind of, you know, by far had the best sustainability perception. And, you know, I think the takeaway there is that a large part of how these companies are perceived to be sustainable is based on just their core business model. You know, you think about Costco, you think less trips to the store, less gas used, you're buying in bulk, so you could make the argument that there is less packaging involved. That's obviously not always the case. But when you compare that to other companies like, you know, a regular grocery store, a lot of big brand items, the idea around Costco, just at its core, I think for people who might not always think a ton about comparing the sustainability efforts of different retailers, just the core business model, I think really resonates with people. And then I think perception also has a lot to do with just brand favorability. People love Costco. Mm-hmm. It has a really, really hardcore customer base. And I think that when you think of sustainability, you think of corporate image, corporate responsibility. And if you have a brand that is as beloved as Costco, I think that overall good perception of the retailer will trickle down into having a favorable image, a favorable view about how they operate, you know, internally when it comes to things like sustainability.
Sky, anything to add about Costco?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a little surprising that there's such a favorable perception, but I think that buying in bulk and also just their control over the products they offer, because so much of their business is private label, probably makes consumers feel like they're doing the right thing and that they have more ability to control what their ultimate environmental impact is.
Yeah, when I'm walking through a Costco, which isn't that often because I don't have a Costco membership, but when I am, something about like the no frills of being in a bulk store like that gives a feeling of more sustainability and less like consumerism. I don't know that that's actually true on a tangible level, but it definitely has that perception.
maybe gives the impression of being less wasteful.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, that I think that totally has something to do with it, because when we talk about greenwashing, I think a lot of people acknowledge that they don't know what goes on behind the scenes. So we're sort of left to our own senses and how does a shopping experience like make us feel? And you're right. I mean, it's just less wasteful, more just sort of direct and to the point. And I think that actually has a lot to do with, you know, how it resonates with what customers perceive as like a sustainable shopping experience, less waste in general.
Okay, so Costco has consumers impressed. Skye, what's another big opportunity for retailers surrounding sustainability?
So I was surprised that the consumer perception around Amazon sustainability ranked so high in the benchmark study as well. They came in third, and that's, you know, pretty good considering that their business model overall is not sustainable. It's based on getting people individual items as quickly as possible, billions of packages, usually in excessively large boxes, arriving at the doorstep. And so I think that might be just because consumers are so familiar with them and have generally a favorable opinion of them as well, if you're a Prime member. That really gives them a platform to then kind of promote their sustainability initiatives. They recently released their 2021 sustainability report, and that actually found that their carbon emissions rose, fueled by pandemic shopping. Carbon emissions rose pretty much in line with the rise in overall revenues, which was 22%. Carbon emissions rose by 18%, according to their report. And so while they are making initiatives to, you know, have zero net emissions by 2030 and investing more in renewable energy and electric vehicles and zero emission using zero emissions fulfillment or delivery vehicles, that's really a very long-term view. It's not something that is going to happen overnight. And certainly, there's still, I think, I feel a lot of frustration when I don't take the option to have my package delivered 3 days later on Amazon Day instead of overnight. And I still feel frustration when a tiny item arrives in a locked box with lots of plastic bubble wrap around it.
Yeah, I think the Amazon case was really interesting because you're right, Skye. It's like not only do people really familiar with Amazon and they like the fact that it makes their lives easier, so they also spend a ton of money and effort on marketing how they're operating sustainably and what their efforts are. So it's not only this report, there are a lot of the, you know, big brand Amazon marketing messaging is around the employee experience and around their efforts to operate more sustainably. And I think that, you know, what you said, Skye, it also, when you look at the category perception of this report, it's reflected there, because in categories where we break down the perception of these retailers in the report, they do well in sustainable product selection. They do pretty good in packaging and shipping. And I think it's because of these initiatives like Amazon Day, or they, you know, show that they're using recycled tape on the boxes. Even recycling, they're doing okay. Where they did the worst is corporate level sustainability. So I think that once again, you're dealing with perception here. I think people view Amazon favorably because of the fact that it makes their life convenient, and they've heard about sort of the efforts that they're making to be a little bit more sustainable and things like how they're boxing and shipping and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, in their view of Amazon, in their corporate practices, still leaves a lot to be desired. And that's why I think that they were lower on the list in that category compared to some of the other categories that impacts the customer directly.
Yeah, Amazon's like the anti-Costco. When you go to Costco, you're going there, you're taking one trip, you're buying everything in bulk. That's the opposite of what you're doing with Amazon. It's coming to you. It's coming one piece at a time. It's all in individual packaging, but still Amazon is ranking highly. Amazon also has this paradox, right, where like carbon emissions rose last year. They rose because the company was doing well. When you have better sustainability marketing, people are more inclined to shop with you, your carbon emissions are going to rise more. So it really also is a great example of this paradox of actual sustainability versus perceived sustainability.
Yeah, it's a depressing, very depressing cycle that you just described there, Sarah. But it's a good point.
Hopefully less depressing will be our last major sustainability opportunity. What retailer is an example of another major sustainability opportunity, Blake?
Yeah, so in the way that our perceptions ranking, I'm not going to give away the full list, but the way that it panned out is big box retailers and grocers tended to have the most favorable sustainability perceptions. And then there are home improvement stores and pharmacies at the end of the list. And Walgreens and CVS, the two largest pharmacies by overall retail sales in the U.S., according to the NRF, they were at the bottom of our list of the 10 retailers. And that's not necessarily because people think that these pharmacies are, you know, not doing enough to operate sustainably, or they are, you know, purposely like wasteful, or something inherently wrong with the business model. I think it's just a lack of awareness around how these types of stores operate, because a lot of the sustainability messaging that we see are from stores that are, you know, big box retailers and grocery stores, just because these stores make up a much larger part of people's lives. I mean, people spend most of their money on food and beverage. They're very connected to these retailers, and they might know a little bit more about, you know, how they're operating. However, a pharmacy also is a really strong touch point between the consumer. It's where people go, you know, to pick up their medications. It's where they go when they're sick. They buy their, you know, healthcare and personal items there. So the fact that they scored low on the list, I actually think is an opportunity. If, you know, something like a pharmacy that does have this like strong connection with the consumer, like these, you know, big box retailers and grocery retailers do, to, you know, talk a little bit more about, you know, what they can do in order to operate more sustainably, to increase that perception, not exactly because they are inherently, you know, less sustainable than the retailers that did better than them on the list. I actually think by and large, that's probably not the case. Once again, we don't have any way of knowing whether, you know, at the bottom line, at the end of the day, whether CVS is more sustainable than Costco is. But the fact that they scored low on the list, I would say, isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think it's an opportunity to just increase awareness and have a more favorable perception. And you have an opportunity as a retailer that has a strong brand connection like a pharmacy does.
Cool. That is all we have time for today. Thank you for talking to me today, Blake.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you, Sky.
Great to be here, Sarah.
All right. If you want to read more about what we talked about today, subscribers can check out Blake's report on insiderintelligence.com. Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast, hopefully sustainably. I didn't write a line for you today, Victoria. Sorry. We'll get it next time. Thank you, Marcus, for filling in last week while I was out. We will be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail and eMarketer Podcast. And you can tune in tomorrow for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer Podcast.